It's time for the all-new Gervie's Law, cross-examining the ages, with your host, Alan Gervie, and introducing your co-host, Michelle Lobato. Alan is the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 40 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie. Nice music. And this is Gervie's Law. And I want to welcome to the show Michelle, co-host Michelle Lobato.
Hi there. Happy to be here.
I know you are because you almost didn't make it.
Why did I almost not make it?
Were you skiing maybe?
Yeah, Park City, baby.
Yeah, did you have fun?
I had lots of fun. Lots of bruises too. Lots of après.
Booze?
Booze and bruises. Okay. Boozes and bruises.
Boozes and bruises. That's the best kind of ski trip. I was there with my family about 3 weeks ago. Not a lot of snow, but we made the best of it. And I know you had a little more snow than I did when
it's getting quite concerning. No, it's January. Shouldn't it be dumping?
I know. Well, anyway, we're not going to worry about that because we want to welcome our special guest to the show today. More exciting than snow in Deer Valley, which I was, Park City, Deer Valley. Our show today is going to feature someone who is very accomplished. He is a television and film writer, producer, and director. We're going to talk about showrunner, which is kind of the same thing, and he can explain to us what that's all about. He's well known for the CBS series The Good Wife, which was nominated for many awards. He is, what I just said, the co-showrunner on the hugely successful Netflix series The Lincoln Lawyer. He's also been a writer for Now and Again, Night Visions, Dr. Vegas, and the CBS legal drama, there is a legal connection here, Shark, which he also produced, and he wrote the feature film Thick as Thieves. He is a lawyer. Thank you. Finally, last week we had Susan Miller, the astrologist for the stars, who had nothing to do with law. We finally have someone on the show who has something to do with law, graduated from the University of Virginia School of Law, a very fine institution. And his experience as a lawyer has created such great authenticity for Lincoln Lawyer. And the new series is coming out this season, February 5th. Lincoln Lawyer got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes last year and was number one at one point on the Netflix Global Top 10. I want to welcome to the show Ted Humphrey. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you for having me.
And you know, with all of your success, Ted, I have one burning question that I really need answered right now. Are you ready?
Yes.
I'm not trying to cross-examine you.
I'm here.
Who will be the quarterback for the Cleveland Browns next year?
Shedeur Sanders.
Really?
I think so.
Don't you think he made enough money in college with his NIL and maybe they need to move on?
I didn't say he should be the quarterback. I said he would be the quarterback.
Are you disappointed to see Kevin Stefanski leaving, former Viking offensive coordinator, moving on to Atlanta?
No, I'm not.
No? You're not a Stefanski fan?
I'm not a Stefanski fan.
It's just like the Lakers, one of your hates.
I'm unfortunately, at this point, barely a Browns fan.
Really?
And that's because you have to understand the level of fandom that I had at one time in my life, going back to like the Bernie Kosar years.
Yeah.
And I mean, that team meant so much to me and that community at that time. But ever since Mr. Haslam bought the team, it's been one disaster after another.
But didn't you have like a lot of memories as a child with your dad, who was a referee, college referee in the USFL, going to the games? Like, doesn't that create the special nature of your relationship versus who the owner was and how the Browns sucked and you had to put a bag over your head?
It does. You're right. You're absolutely right. It does. So what's he doing right now? What's the next thing he's doing? He's going to move the stadium to the suburbs and build a dome.
And?
Cleveland football is played in the snow.
We said that about our Vikings.
It's played on Lake Erie in the snow.
The U.S. Bank building is beautiful. I go every year to watch my Vikings, and you are going to regret what you just said when you see the beautiful new stadium.
Maybe.
You better become a Browns fan.
I tell you what really soured me more than that was Deshaun Watson, was the deal for Deshaun Watson. Both the ugliness of that situation and also the way he hamstrung the team with the ridiculous guaranteed deal he made.
Unbelievable. I mean, we had that experience with Herschel Walker way back when, which ruined the Vikings for a few years with that deal. But Deshaun Watson, I think, was different because there was a lot of negativity surrounding his.
And then he just wasn't any good.
And he got
injured. At least Herschel Walker was good.
Yeah. But, you know, the injuries, you have Deshaun Watson no longer. You don't have to worry about it. Time for the Browns to rise so you can be the Cleveland guy that you grew up as, you know, Guardian fan.
All of it.
All of it.
That's actually my first love, was the baseball team.
Yeah. Well, you know, they've had some success.
Went to every home game of the 1997 playoffs and World Series. One of the greatest sporting experiences of my life up until, unfortunately, they lost Game 7 of that World Series. So, yeah.
Well, I just experienced that with my Toronto Blue Jays and the Dodgers, so I know what it feels like to lose Game 7. Mm-hmm. Michelle has no idea what we're talking about.
No idea.
My wife is a huge Dodgers fan, so I had to. Yeah.
I did check your Instagram, and on your Instagram bio, it says rugby lover.
Yes. In fact, I was.
In no particular order.
In no particular order.
Yeah.
I played rugby for years, and I just in November took a trip to the UK, and I saw England play New Zealand at Twickenham in London, and I saw Scotland play Argentina at Murrayfield in Edinburgh. So, yeah.
Wow. And you played rugby.
I did.
Not a big guy.
No, but back then especially, you know, the old saying is it's a sport for all sizes. There's a place on the team for everybody. I was a little bigger then. I wasn't any taller, but I was a little, you know, wider. But increasingly, like NFL football, when you watch it now, these guys are massive.
Yeah.
And even, you know, it's like wing, which is sort of equivalent to wide receiver in football. You know, those used to be small, fast guys. Now they're gigantic, fast guys.
Even the coxswain in rowing is getting bigger.
It's getting bigger, right. No, exactly.
Yeah. You know, so I got to ask you something because we got to change the subject. I could talk Cleveland sports, Minnesota sports, LA sports.
So could I.
I could do it all day long.
God, please,
I had no idea you were a Minnesota fan. Love that.
But you have a gig here that we need to talk about. And I want to talk about this gig because we all went to law school. Not all of us, but two of us in this room. And I will
less
tell
than
you,
half of us.
Less than half. And I will tell you something that so many students who finish law school have a dream. And that dream is to not be a lawyer, to not be a practicing 100%. Lawyer. How did you swing this? And I'm not talking about an Albert Bell swing. I'm just telling you that so many of us are jealous that you parlayed this into a successful film and television career.
You know, I don't know that I parlayed it, meaning I didn't come out here intending to exploit my legal degree in Hollywood, to write legal things. I mean, I was happy to, but that wasn't necessarily my intention. And I think if you look at somebody like David Kelly, for example,
who created Lincoln Lawyer, who co-created it,
and who I know very well, I think he did, you know, he was a lawyer, and then he came out here because he had an opportunity to do LA Law, which is obviously a legal show, and then, you know, he's done other things besides legal shows, but really, that's what he's best known for, going back to Ally McBeal and The Practice and
right.
other shows in the 90s. I went to law school for the same reason that a lot of people go to law school, which is I didn't know what else to do.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. I went to Georgetown University, which is hardly a Hollywood feeder school. It's a little bit more of one now, but it really wasn't one then.
Right.
And I knew I wanted to do some version of this, but I had no idea how. I didn't know. I'd never been to Los Angeles.
Wow.
I mean, I think I was here once when I was 4 years old or something. And I didn't know anybody in this business. I have no connections to it. And so, but I was a good student, and I was very good at taking standardized tests, so I did well on the LSAT. And so I got, you know, I sort of had my pick of law schools to go to. Right. And I went to UVA because it was close to D.C., and I thought I wanted to stay in D.C. because I love it there. It's a great school.
And at the time, I think it was in the top three or four
schools.
Yeah,
no, no, it's a great school. And along with, say, like Yale and Stanford, kind of well known for not being cutthroat the way that Harvard might be or some other places, right? And that was very much true. I mean, it was a very laid-back environment for a top law school. It was a very laid-back environment. But I went through there, and I probably really wanted to be a U.S. attorney. That seemed interesting to me. My older sister was at the time a public defender, and she spent basically her whole career as a public defender, 30-plus years in the D.C. area. And I thought criminal law would be really interesting. But I also knew, you know, that's you're working for the government. It's not a high paying job. I mean, it's a good springboard to politics if that's something you're interested in. I wasn't really terribly interested in that. And when I graduated, I got a job at a law firm in Washington, and I just hated it.
How long did it take to hate?
About 5 minutes, but but it took about 2 years to build
get
up.
Out.
Yeah, to get out. And I found myself at one point, I would wake up in the morning and I would just be dreading going to the office. And I would call my assistant, who they still called secretaries then, this was in the 90s, and I would say, turn on my computer, put a cup of coffee on my desk. I would literally leave a suit jacket hanging over my chair. And because I was like, and I'll be there when I get there. And I knew something was wrong because I'm not an unmotivated person. I'm not that's not me. And so I just went like, this is not working out. I'm clearly not cut out for this. And part of that was the firm I was at, that it wasn't a good fit. And, you know, honestly, they hired me to be a litigator and then they didn't have enough litigation to do. But, you know, that's never an excuse when the billable hours aren't there or whatever, right?
Right.
And so you know, I engaged a headhunter and I was looking at other opportunities and meeting with other firms. And then I just thought, this is it. This is the chance. Like I was 20.
So you're going to move to LA?
Yeah, I was 26 years old.
Wow.
I wasn't married. I didn't own a house or have any responsibilities.
No responsibilities.
And I just thought, if I'm going to give this a shot, now's the time to do it. And the slight difference maybe between when I had graduated from college and this, which was 5 years later, 6 years later, was that I now knew one person in LA, who was a friend of mine I'd gone to high school with, who had become, in the interim, a fairly successful writer, comedy writer, Seinfeld and lots of things. And that wasn't really what I wanted to do, but at least I knew somebody and I had a couch I could sleep on when I got here. And so
that's a real typical story to the couch.
Yeah, I packed up my car and I moved out here and I slept on the couch.
Okay, so now we fast forward. How did you meet David Kelly? Because I know that you had been in the business, you had the writing jobs and everything, but I want to get to the Lincoln Lawyer. How did that happen? Because so many people would love to meet David Kelly and work with him.
I mean, it really happened through this project. I had never met David before, although I had been kind of in the same orbit as him for some time, and I knew lots of people who had worked with him and so on. But as it turned out, I had never done so. I spent 6+ years on The Good Wife, which was obviously a very successful legal show, but David Kelly didn't have anything to do with it. It was Robert and Michelle King. And I was there right from day one of that and remain very, very proud of that show. And the depiction of a law firm that we did in that show, which I can talk about later if you want. But meeting David came through this project. It came through the fact that this project was originally set up at the CBS network, believe it or not. It was supposed to be a network show. And I had a deal at CBS, an overall deal at CBS. And so it made sense for me to partner with David to do this show. And that's how I met him.
Was there some controversy surrounding getting David together, not with you, but with others? And I heard through the grapevine that there was a lot of stuff that was going on at the time, and you kind of was the white knight who came out to put this whole thing together.
I don't know if I would say that. There was no controversy with David. I mean, David.
Not with David.
David is lovely, and David is, you know, as advertised, meaning he's just one of the most talented and prolific people I've ever encountered in my life. And, you know, the stories about David are legendary, that he can write a whole script on a legal pad in an hour or something. You know, he really is sort of that guy. And just the nicest, you know, really a nice person to work with. You know, I don't think it was that. I think it was just that David has projects that he's really, really involved in. And he has other projects that he's somewhat less involved in. And in this case, it made sense. You know, he and I partnered on this, and it made sense. He had other things he was going to go do, and it made sense for me to sort of take this over from there and run with it. So.
And he hasn't been involved since?
Not terribly, no. Yeah. Yeah.
Michelle, I know that you talk about, you asked me earlier about a showrunner and what that mm-hmm. represents. Here you have one, because you know, we know what a writer-producer, and is a showrunner everything? What?
Yeah, first I wanted to ask you, so you get into your first law job, 5 minutes and you hate it. You get into your first TV writing
That might be exaggerating job. A little, but yeah.
Okay, first day.
It's good radio.
Yeah, and it's amazing because you make you make being a lawyer look cool and look fun and look enticing and adrenaline rushing. And clearly it seems like that's not how you felt about it.
Well, I think what Mickey Haller does is cool and fun and adrenaline rushing.
Absolutely.
It's just not that to be an associate at a corporate law firm. That's all.
Why do people love him so much? Because as a lawyer for many years, not everyone loves me.
Why do people love him so much? Well, first of all, we're talking about a fictional person, obviously.
Well, yeah.
And we're talking about an incredibly charismatic actor playing him, which that was by design, of course. And, you know, criminal, I mean, I mentioned I have a sister who was a public defender for a long time. Criminal defense, I really believe criminal defense attorneys are doing the Lord's work. Not always. I mean, I understand somebody's got to represent the cartel guy and the whatever, and maybe you don't think that's the Lord's work. But the idea of holding the state's feet to the fire on the Constitution and making sure everybody gets what they are, what the rights that they are entitled to and the defense that they are entitled to. And, you know, the difficult where people often say of criminal defense attorneys, how do you represent guilty people? I would turn that question on its head. The Constitution ensures that they are entitled to that defense, and somebody's got to do it, and sometimes it's difficult.
Right.
And you have to find the way to do that, you know, without losing your soul. And I think that's part of what people enjoy watching. Also, obviously, we have the freedom to tell the stories we want to tell, and we try to tell the stories that are both interesting but that give him a sympathetic seeming client or a truly sympathetic client, one of the two.
Yeah. And Dalen Rodriguez, who's your co-showrunner,
yes,
talks about how you are really the heart and soul of the show. And she accredits the authenticity of the show to your experience as a lawyer.
Well, it's really important to me. I mean, I think a lot of people need to take credit for that. We have a wonderful legal consultant, Rachel Bowers, who's actually a current practicing DA in the district attorney's office downtown. We've had various defense attorneys that we've consulted with. We have a former LAPD detective. And these are people, by the way, who come to us via Rachel and our detective consultant, Tim Marsha, came to us via Michael Conley because these are people that he's used in writing his books. And it's very, verisimilitude is very important to Michael as well. So I think a lot of people need to take credit for the nitty-gritty of that authenticity. But what I will say is that going back to The Good Wife, authenticity was incredibly important to me. So when we started The Good Wife, for example, you know, a lot of legal shows on TV, and you've watched a lot of them, they take all these ridiculous shortcuts, like somebody gets arrested for murder and the trial starts the next day or something crazy like that. And I, you know, that stuff always makes any lawyer's blood
cringe.
Boil. Yeah. So right from the first day of The Good Wife, I said, we can't do that stuff. And as a result, I was really proud of this. We had all these, it opened up storytelling. It doesn't foreclose it. It opens it up. We had episodes of The Good Wife that were all about depositions or that were, that started on, you know, with a verdict. And then it was all about what happened. Or they were all different, you know, they were about settlement conferences or this or that. They were all
things
different.
That actually happened
things
in
that
the
actually
law
happened.
Practice.
There's drama to be mined from things that actually happened in the law practice.
So let's talk about season 4, February 5th. It's going to launch. It's The Law of Innocence, the Michael Connelly book.
That's the book it's based on, yes.
It's based on. Talk about, I know you can't, you don't want to give away any secrets, but a lot of people are anticipating because there's a little bit of a twist going on for season four, at least with Mickey and his situation.
Well, it's not a spoiler in that it was set up at the end of season three that Mickey, and this comes, this situation is in the book and comes right out of the book, that Mickey is pulled over for driving with, I think it's a missing license plate, and the cop then discovers blood dripping out of the car and opens the trunk of the car, and it's a client of Mickey's, this a con man named Sam Scales, who is a sort of recurring character on the show and a recurring client of Mickey's, is dead in the trunk, has been shot dead. And so, of course, Mickey is arrested as a person of interest in this case. And season four we describe as, you know, Mickey's toughest client yet because his client
is himself.
Yeah, exactly. And we all know the saying about the lawyer who represents himself.
Has a fool for a lawyer.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, it's a fear that a lot of us lawyers have that we are either framed or there's some misrepresentation by a former client or maybe a friend or a colleague. I think it's an incredibly interesting concept for this season. And is that something that you came up with, or how did that originate to do something that's very different from what a lot of the legal shows have done in the past?
Well, again, I can't take credit for what's in the book.
You can.
It's Michael Connelly came up with it. And I want to give a shout out to Michael, by the way, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners are fans of his work.
How does your creative direction work together?
So Michael, first of all, is, if there's a nicer man to work with than David Kelly, it might be Michael Connelly. You know, he's incredibly collaborative. He was more involved with the show, I'll be honest. He was more involved with the show on a day-to-day basis earlier. He's a very busy man. He writes at least a book a year, and he has, I think, now four shows based on his various books on different platforms. So his time is spoken for. But he's incredibly collaborative. He will be the first to say, gosh, I never loved what we did in the book here, or this sounds better than what we did in the book. Let's do that. You know,
he's very humble.
Mm-hmm. Very humble and very willing to, you know, change things, throw the baby out with the bathwater, but throw the baby out and reinvent. And not only willing to, but I think he has said that his audience really likes that. So to take examples from Bosch, you know, obviously another show based on his work, Bosch has a lot more books than The Lincoln Lawyer.
And by the way, are they ever going
to... No, I'll get to that in a second. There's not really a way to do it.
Get to it. 3 minutes.
Well, because Bosch is Amazon and Mickey Haller is Netflix and sort of Never the Twain.
Reality sucks.
Yeah, Never the Twain Shall Meet. We have some plans for other things. But
it's a great teaser.
So but he, you know, he's always said his audience really loves it when we reinvent the story enough that it's familiar enough to them. They know, oh, I know what this is.
Yeah.
But then it's still surprising, and they can still be, you know, have their white knuckles on the edge of the seat because they don't know what's going to happen next because we change things. So it kind of is the best of both worlds.
Were there any guest stars this season that really impressed you or surprised you in any way?
Constance Zimmer does a wonderful job as a very, very tough DA who's known as Death Row Dana Berg, who they call Death Row Dana. She was wonderful. Gosh, now I'm drawing a blank because I should have come more prepared for that question. Oh, Kylie Richards. Kylie Richards, yes, was fantastic as a client of Lorna's.
It's a real housewife.
Yes, exactly, and was great to work with. And I got to ask her about what it was like working with Jamie Lee Curtis on the original Halloween when she was a kid.
Wow.
We have, you know, Elliot Gould has been a longtime recurring member of the cast, and it's such a thrill. To some extent, the show draws a lot of its kind of visual style from the great California noirs, right? Chinatown. And one of them is The Long Goodbye, which starred Elliot Gould. So it's there's this really kind of meta thrill for me of having
he's amazing.
Elliot in the show.
Yeah. And what a legend.
Yeah.
in the last minute, tell everyone, a lot of fans listening want to know this season, when does it start? I already teased that. And what can they expect?
They can expect the most emotional season we've ever done. The biggest stakes for Mickey, really, and the most sort of personal story we've ever told. And I think the biggest roller coaster we've taken the character and, by extension, the audience on in the show. And they can expect it on February 5th.
February 5th. Ted Humphrey, thank you for being on Gervie's Law. Really exciting. And, you know, we want to make sure that Sanders is the quarterback next year.
I have no dog in that fight. I'm just giving a prediction.
But you do have a fight. A dog in the fight with the Lincoln Lawyer, Netflix. Don't miss it. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me.